You got to admit, old Shepard's got style. By God, he don't. He doesn't mess around. And for those of you who are wondering what style is, style, friends, is viewpoint. Bring it up there, Larry. Which is something that many people have trouble having. It also can be trouble, too, if you have a viewpoint. We'll sing it out again. By the way, for those of you who are curious, and there's been many writing about it in the past years, there's a set of fantastic lyrics for this theme song. However, you know how it is, censorship. You'll notice that the show tonight has a certain verve and éclat, joie de vivre. I'd like to tell you that, you know, it's like a doctor who is sitting there in his consultation room and a guy comes in with a terminal case of warts. He doesn't like to have to tell him that this wart that he's got in his thumb is going to grow to a gigantic wart and that ultimately he himself will be a wart with feet. He doesn't want to tell him that. And the doctor is never popular for telling a man this. No way. In fact, I have a friend who is a doctor, and he told me about a friend of his who learned that lesson in the worst, hardest, most mean possible way. His specialty, this doctor's specialty, was avoirdupois, obesity. Did you know there are doctors who specialize in that? Very unpopular doctors. Because the disease is hated. It is accompanied by self-loathing. It's accompanied by many little drifting, cloudy, psychological, misty, flashing bits of anger that go in all different directions. It is not true that the world loves a fat man. Let's put it this way. The world never casts a fat man in almost anything unless he's playing a clown, a knave, or a private eye. And that's a very special... that can often be all three once in the same simultaneously. But this friend of mine was telling me about his buddy who got out of one of the most eminent medical universities in the country. And he studied in Europe and he came back and he set up his practice. And within 10 minutes, his first patient arrived. A lady who couldn't all be jelly because jelly don't shake like that. She came in, and you could hear the beams creaking in the building. And in fact, she had a guy came with her who had a small portable hand winch. And they brought her up there. And I'm not laughing at her problem. She just had it, see. So she came in there, and at the same time, as she sat down in front of the desk there, he had one of these elegant chromium Eames chairs, you know, the kind of Eames chairs, you know, the kind of the beautiful chairs that he went all out, you know, to buy office furniture. You know, many doctors do this when they first set up practice. They get all excited about getting this IBM multi-dynamic typewriter, and they find out that typing out the bills doesn't get them paid. So ultimately, doctor's furniture begins to get more and more shabby as he gets to be a better doctor. The young doctor often has just the most elegant, newest sort of hip, modern, with an E, umlaut, type furniture, usually made in Denmark. Well, he had one of those chairs, which he was very proud of. He had a whole set of them, see. And they were chrome chairs. They were all made out of stainless steel, chrome plated with the cordovan leather backs, sling backs, and all that stuff. And she sat in the chair. And he said it was fascinating. Have you ever heard an eight-wheel locomotive coming to a halt with all that screaming and squealing of wheels and stuff? He says all of a sudden there's this screaming and squealing coming from in front of his desk, and he sees the lady slowly sink out of sight. He said it was like the sun going down over the Alpines, over the Alpine passes. He saw the top of her head, and finally they winched her up again, and they got her perched on one of his tremendous double-thick steel file cabinets, and she sat there for a while. And he says, I noticed that was beginning to bulge out at the sides. It's a fantastic sight. And he says, and so she whipped out of her handbag, which had a capacity of about 17 bushels. She whipped out of her handbag a two-pound box of assorted Barracino goodies and proceeds to stuff them into her trap steadily as she talked. And she kept telling him she could not understand why she was so fat. Well, at that point, being a doctor, see, he said, well, madam, he said, you'll have to have a complete examination. It is a mystery to me, too, why you're so fat. And all the while, he could hear the chomping of nuggets and the steady crunch of bitter chocolate-covered marshmallows and the clatter of upper plate against peanut cluster was going on steadily. And so finally, after the examination was concluded, a half-an-hour examination with all kinds of little things you squeeze and bands, he had to send out for a special band, you know, for his you know, the thing that they take the blood test or the pressure thing. Well, it didn't go around, see, so they had to send out for a special one. They got this special one from Bellevue that they use for rhinos and things that they bring in there occasionally. So they put it around there, see, and he squeezed it up there, and everything works fine. And finally, he says, well, madam, you have one basic problem. And in between time, by the way, between various phases of the examination, her man kept running out for blimpies. And he'd come back in with, you know, she had a very, very definite taste in blimpies. She liked the Italian sausage blimpie with green peppers, with grated Parmesan cheese. That was the one she went for. And she kept offering him blimpies. And, of course, he said, well, I don't like to do this when I work. Thank you very much. And she said, well, I don't want to let it go to waste, so I might as well eat this one, too. So she'd eat his blimpie, too. You know, that's the problem with a lot of fat people. They order for two, and then when the guy doesn't want it, they eat it just so it doesn't go to waste. And so, anyway, it sure doesn't. She was eating the paper, too, that they came in. He said it was really something to see. So after it was all over, he says, madam, you have one problem. And she said, what was that? What, please? I'm desperate. He says, well, it's a basic problem. Whew, please, I'm so pleased at last I found someone. And he says, well, you just eat too damn much, you know? It was a dead silence. And she, as best she could, she leaped up. He says, it looked like the eruption of a Hawaiian volcano slowly erupted. So she rose heavily from the ground. And she says, I was never so insulted in my life. And at that point, she went down the stairs by aid of the winch, and all the while eating Baby Ruth candy bars as she did. And in the end, he realized one basic truth from that. What is the basic truth? All right, friends, that will be the subject of next week's examination. I want you to use your intelligence and your brain, please. I am now wearing, to explain to you why there is a certain uncontrolled joie de vivre to tonight's effort, is that I am delighted to report that a couple of nights ago, on this very same microphone, we reported that I had received a note from one of the men's apparel research corporations. Curiously enough, they addressed me as Mrs. Shepherd. But nevertheless, I keep getting that kind of mail. But it's the first name confuses everybody, you know. But no, well, after all, it's a French name, and you know those French don't know anything about names. But nevertheless, I got this note, and it says, what is your favorite item of apparel? Well, I had a choice. Like most of us, we have choices in our life. Are you going to chicken out and tell them what they want to hear and therefore make you personally a more elegant person? Like to say, a suede buskin. It's my favorite item of apparel, me and George Plimpton. You know, that kind of elegance, that decayed elegance of people who sit and spend their lives next to potted fern plants, contemplating a bust of Stuart Mott. You don't know who Stuart Mott is? Apple juice, a mile wide. So, nevertheless, the question came up, you know, my head. I says, should I tell him the truth? Or should I write something like my after six evening smoking jacket? Must be a damn fool. Why? So I wrote right down there what I felt. I wrote that my favorite item of apparel, which had been stolen from my office in a terrible, just a terrible ripoff, my favorite item of apparel is the painter's cap. I've always been in love with painter's caps from the time I was a little kid. You know what a painter's cap is? I don't mean the beret, you know, the classical French impressionist beret. I'm talking about a painter's cap, you know, the kind that says Sherwin-Williams blankets the world or paints the world or something. Has a big paintbrush on the front, courtesy of the Acme hardware store. And those to me, have a genuine, definite style. It's unmistakably a painter's cap. You can't say, well, that's a polo hat. You know, that they wear those at the Shea. No, it's a painter's cap. And I look particularly good in them, don't I? So I now have my painter's cap on. As I reported this a couple of nights ago, the Benjamin Moore Company, somebody from the Benjamin Moore crowd heard this, and they sent me two great painter's caps. I can't wear both of them at the same time, not since my operation. But I now have this painter's cap on. It's beautiful. And it is a bicentennial painter's cap. There's a little beautiful American eagle on the side, says Benjamin, where it says, "Paint over all the rotten scars on America," or something like that. And so I wear this in the office. And I'm getting an additional respect. Because after all, the price that painters get these days per hour, you do get respect. And Mr. O'Neill tipped his bowler to me in the... Because I could have called a strike, you know. I could just, just like that. I'd blow the whistle and all every painter for miles around would be out on strike. You know what that would bring about. But nevertheless, I do have my painter's cap on. It's given me added self-confidence. And I feel great about it now. And if anybody else has got any painter's caps out there that they've got bouncing around, like Sherwin-Williams, I'd like a good Sherwin-Williams. I'd like a good, this is a Moorguard hat. I'd like a good DuPont latex. That's a good one. That was a nice one. That was done in the form of a papier-mâché derby. And if you're out there have any painter's caps, well, you know where to get rid of them, and you can complete Shepherd's collection. You know, every day a new painter's cap, one for every day of the week, and I'm sitting down there at the chalk. I went down there today with my Moorguard hat. Again, I got respect. Which is a rare commodity in today's world, friends. Rare. Hey, speaking of other, bits and pieces that we have to pull together here today, and I do feel that we should pull a few of the bits and pieces together. Yeah, here I have it here. We did a show here a couple of months ago on license plates. You know, the slogans on the bottom of license plates. The scenic state, you know, that kind of. But some guy says, well, Lucky, says, Chef, that's great. You collect these, these license plate insignias, various slogans and stuff. In the last 5 or 6, maybe 10 years, there's been a new thing that's been sweeping the country. It hasn't yet hit New York. And that is you pay an extra $5 or $10 and you can get letters on your plate that say something, whatever you want. If your name is, if your name is Cletus, you can get Cletus on there. If you're a total ego, total ego nut, you can get your name on the back of your car. You've seen that all around? Okay. Now, he says he collects them. He says in California, especially, shows an unexpected streak of creativity. He's just come back from California, and these are actual license plates that he has collected. By the way, I might tell you, I won't tip the gap. Here's one. How's this one? Horse 5. Horse 5. He says, imagine calling a horse 5. He says, but horse 5, here's one, meow. How about cheers? Here's one, wazoo. W-H-A-Z-O-O, wazoo. That's not bad. How about rebate? That was on, by the way, a 75 Plymouth Fury. So there's a guy who describes what he's got. How about this one, me sad. Two words, me sad. This one, no toy. It's on a VW. It says no toy. Here's one, honey! Exclamation point at the end. Wee. How about this one? Try Yuko. UCO. I don't know what that one means. How about whiskey? And then, of course, there's one called booze. That's a, you know, common one. How about Wigsy? Here's one. Sot. S-O-T. here's a really good one. Lout. L-O-U-T. Now, for those of you who don't know what the word lout means, look it up. It may describe many of your friends and relatives. Here's one. Hop in. And he said that the lady that was driving this looked like she was in a business that is not necessarily officially accredited, but is quite old and quite popular. Hop in. And this one that says, I love you. Oh, God. Oh, I love you. Oh, boy. There's a guy that's just looking for a bashed-in back end. How about this one? See my car. Oh, he's got a C, and then it says, my, M-I, car. See my car. Oh, wow. How about the St. Mark? Oh, a little religion there comes in. Brat 3. Brat 3. Gay 1. That's kind of a good one. That says it right there. How about, hi, Ike. I just got hi, Ike. Here's one. Tell all. That's kind of good. Tell all. Here's one. I think this one is kind of nice. This will really fit here in New York. Schlep. It comes right out. The Schlep. Mrs. G. Mysterious lady wearing a black mask. She had black flowers on the car. You know, this very elegant lady. Margot Roger. He says, in thousands of just plain ordinary names. Well, I saw one. You won't believe this. I saw one that was a Massachusetts plate no later than 3 weeks ago that was simply the word, just one word. It says W-O-P. Now, I saw that. The guy goes by. I says, well, how did he get away with that? You know? And there he goes driving on the street, and he's on Route 128 outside of Boston. And, you know, guys kept looking at his car and honking, getting mad, you know, catching up. Well, when they saw, though, that obviously he had a big flowing mustache, you know, and he was covered with pasta, it was okay, see? But there it was. I don't make the news, friends. I only report it. But one of the greatest coups that I ever heard of came about when I was living for a while in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati, the license plates are made by the state pen out there. And, you know, they have a factory up in Columbus or someplace where they work, all these guys in maximum security are making license plates all day long. And, you know, that must be a really frustrating job to be in for life or something, and you're making license plates which are devoted. You know, what is a license plate used for? It's a passport to endless travel and freedom. And, you know, it's really ironical. So these guys are making these license plates, and I had a car out there, and when you get the plate, you didn't request any numbers or anything. They just came to you. And they used to have combinations of letters and numbers, almost like the way New York has now, like, you know, XDY123, something like that. And once in a while, you'd see some really elegant man from the state capitol who knew, you know, the real people in the license bureau. He'd have just letters, like his license, it would say his initial, like JPS or LDQ, and those were really high upshot, you know, really top guys. So one day, out of the blue, this guy living in Dayton, just another guy walking around citizen, he gets his license plate in the mail. He opens it up, and he cannot believe what his license plate is. It is a simple, ancient, Anglo-Saxon four-letter word that relates to physical activity remotely related to procreation. And that was, and there was. and it came in that year, the license plate was particularly colorful. It was a bright yellow background and burning black letters. You know, you could see it for 30 miles, and it was a big plate. And he gets this license plate. He says, wow, you know, holy smokes. At that point, he rushes out, and he takes his old plates off of his Studebaker, you know, conventional number, and he clamps his new plates on with pride. You know, this was beyond all the dreams of any license plate holder that he could get something like this. And at that point, he drives out of his driveway and starts to roll down the street. And he goes about a half a block, and there's a school down the street. And there's thousands of kids are getting out of school, and they see his license. Hey, Charlie, look at a plate. And by the time he's in the middle of the third block down the street, there's a crowd. But guys are running out, getting in their cars, and they're taking pictures of the back of his car. And by the time he reached six blocks down a main intersection, five squad cars converged on him. He was given tickets for everything from public obscenity to indecent exposure. God, and they were laying tickets on him. He kept saying, "Well, here's my registration. Look, I got it from the state. Look, I come from Columbus. Just get in the car, get in the back there, smart guy." And the poor guy, he actually had to pay. Did you know what they got him on? No, he had to pay. He had to pay fines for public indecency. He says, "You should have known when you got that license plate that it was a mistake." So, what do you mean a mistake? The state make a mistake? Are you kidding? Oh, it's only people that make mistakes, not the state. Forget it, buddy. And they tried to investigate to discover what convict had turned that out. Wrapped it up, sent it off, and they never found out. So there is today, right now, an unsung hero somewhere. He's probably still in the slam. Any guy that would put that on a license plate, he's got nothing to lose, everything to gain. so that is a true, actual story. Of course, since that time now, they have tight, strict controls on that kind of stuff. That's why I wonder how that Massachusetts plate got through. I can think of some really interesting in words that the general public doesn't know the real meaning of. You agree? You know a few of those, huh? Everybody does. But, speaking of license plates, I think that the funniest thing that ever happened to me one time with license plates, I still to this day don't know how it happened. I was parked in a parking lot in Maine. This is some time ago. This is about 8 or 9 years ago. I parked in a parking lot in Maine. I had New York plates on my car. You know, I live in New York, so I had New York plates. I came back out of this. This was a huge supermarket complex. They had hardware stores and Zara discount stores and the whole bit there, you know. And about an hour or maybe 2 hours after I parked, there must have been 12,000 cars in this parking lot. I came out of the store there. And I'm looking for my car. I walk up and down the line. I see these, you know, all the cars. And I know where the car was, but I can't find my car. Can't figure it out. And so I go back in the store, and I come back out again. I said, "Now I'm going to start all over again. Now I know that I turned slightly left. Now I'm going to try it again." So I walk down that long line of cars. And there was a car there. In fact, there were several cars. The car that I happened to have at the time was a car of which there were many around. It was a little unusual, but there were many of them around. It seems like a contradiction, but it can be true. You know, there are many Jaguars, yet the Jaguar is an unusual car. So, finally says, "I can't believe it." And I looked in this car, and sure enough, inside the car was a pipe. I have a pipe. My pipe was in there. I go back out, and I look around. There are Maine license plates on this car now. I go back out again, I look and go, and then I got my key, see? So I put the key in the thing, I says, "This can't be." So I put the key in the door. Sure enough, the door opens up. I get in and it's my car. There's all my stuff in, you know, bottle caps in the back seat and yes, it's my car. Absolutely my car. I open up the glove compartment and there's my junk in there. My glove compartment is like Fibber McGee's closet. You don't dare open it because the stuff just leaps. You get hit by wrenches and air pressure gauges and decks of cards and footballs and books of matches and junk. It's my car. I said, "What the hell?" So at that point, I get back out of the car and I walk around again, and there it is. Two absolutely matching, very official looking Maine license plates. to this day, I don't know what happened. I didn't know what to do, see? So at that point, I says, well, I'm not going to... You know, I knew what would happen if I went down to the local slammer and told them about that. They'd confiscate the car and they'd put on an APB and the whole bit, see? So I just drove around with the main license plates. I don't know what it was. It could have been an axe murder, you know. But I drove around for about 2 weeks with the main license plates. And finally, when it was all said and done, I drove back to New York with the main license plates. And finally, I got to the garage and where I keep the car, see? And I drove in. And this guy says, all right. He says, well, pull it over there. I'll give you a check. I says, it's me. Don't you remember me? He says, yeah, what'd you do? Get a new car? I says, no, this is my car. He says, what the hell's with the main plates? I says, I've got my reasons. And, you know, I like to have a little mystery in my life. He says, okay. No questions asked, no questions answered, right? I says, that's right, Luigi. And so at that point, oh, yeah. Now, by the way, there's a myth around the garage that this guy with this sinister-looking car in the corner there, you know, that foreign car, is up to no good, you know, that he's got a button that he presses on the dashboard and the plates change, throws tacks out the back. I've always wanted to have a car that did that. You know, you press a button, it throws 4 pounds of carpet tacks behind you. But that'd be a great accessory, by the way. So, I did call up the license bureau, see, and I said to the license bureau, I says, I have a very difficult problem. I don't know how to explain it to you. And they, I says, somebody took my plates off my car and put some main plates on. And they said, oh, really? Are they valid main plates? And I said, yes. And so they says, what's the number on them? I says, well, here. And I gave them the number. See, and he says, oh, fine. Well, you just send them in. Send them in and be sure to send a note with it. And we'll send you back a duplicate set of plates. $5, please. So at that point, I set the plate. I never knew. I never learned what happened, you know. So the license plate is today, with many people, one of the last avenues of artistic expression. And the license plate, you know, has a certain mystique about it. What license plate, for example, has a... all right, here's one. What license plate is made in the shape of the state that it represents? Hey, listen, speaking of licenses, I know one guy that has collected all his driver's licenses from the time he was 16, got his first learner's permit, and he has them all. He's about 108 now, and he carries them all with him. And when any time somebody comes up and says, you know, a guy looks in the window, this guy with the big hat looks and says, all right, come on, buddy, let me see your license. Give me your driver's license. He reaches into his glove compartment and takes out this great big package and says, which one? And he hands him out there. And the guy says, I want the 1975 license, smart guy, not the 1916 license. But he's got a great collection. We're going to skip that one. Don't get confused, gentlemen. So I know another guy, by the way, that has collected... Oh, there's all kinds of great collections. You know, I know a guy that collects... bus transfers from all over the country. You know, bus transfers. You know, those little green piece of paper they used to give out in the buses. He collects his bus transfers and tokens of various types. Of course, with the way New York City tokens are going, they will be worth endless amounts of money eventually. I mean, one ride on a subway could go for $30, $40. And, you know, you could have made it into keychains and stuff. Would you please bring it up there, Eddie? You notice? Joie de vivre. Elan. Pizzazz. And it all came about because of my great new Moorguard hat. It's a terrific hat. And, yes, it's got a flexible bill on the front there. And I think I'll go out and do a little freelance barn painting. How about this license plate? Wigsy. Oh, that's a little cute. You know. Oh, by the way, I saved the last one for last. There's a guy that has a plate in California that says, I hate you. The U, of course, is a letter.